You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio and Instagram. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is my goal for you. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. How amazing would that be to wake up and not even think about what you're going to eat, what you're not going to eat, how many calories you're going to burn, all of that stuff. What freedom, what liberation. That's what we're after. We are after liberation. Because I don't believe that you recover from eating problems, from eating disorders, from any kind of problematic, dysfunctional eating. I don't believe in recovery. I believe in liberation. We recover from a bad breakup and we liberate ourselves from food, weight, body image conflicts. Hi, Josh on Instagram. I'm happy that you're joining today too, and welcome you to call. Josh or anyone else, if you would like to talk to me, the number here is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you. Because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is weighing on you, what is eating at you. So give me a call and let me know. You know what, Josh, I don't know if it's better for you to be on Facebook or Instagram, but I don't know, maybe Ronan, my engineer, if you're hearing this, does it make a difference if Josh is on Facebook and calling versus just calling generally? I'm not sure it makes a difference. Ronan is saying, no, it does not make a difference. So whatever works for you. And hi from Renata in Brazil. Glad you're here. Okay, so I have some questions from, these are from members of my Food for Thought community, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook. If you're not a member, by the way, you're going to want to be a member. So just go ahead and search Facebook for Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community and come join us. You can ask me questions there. So here is a question. This is from Carly Gash, who, if you listen to the show, you are familiar with Carly Gash. She says, how do I get rid of the ongoing anxiety and feelings of miserable unworthiness? Well, the feelings of unworthiness, which are really ideas, those are thoughts, not feelings. Feelings are sad, mad, glad, afraid, frustrated, fearful, anxious, guilty, all of those things. So this is really a thought, thoughts of unworthiness, which create bad feelings, uncomfortable feelings. So you want to look at where did you get the idea that you were unworthy? What is unworthiness? And what is worthiness? Like, how do you even define unworthiness? How do you define worthiness? How will you know when you are worthy? And I will tell you this, it is not a number on the scale. It is not a number on the scale. It is a sense of goodness from within, a sense of peace from within. And when you feel good about you, you feel worthy no matter what is going on in your life. And that, so Carly Gash, what gave you the idea that you're not good enough? What needs to change for you to feel good enough? Those are some things that you want to think about. Please feel free to call me, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. A question from Christina.
Hello.
Christina says, I would love to have some tips on how to deal with loneliness and not feeling important.
Hi,
I know you've
Nina,
talked about this, but I need a lot of repetition. Thank you, heart. Christina. And this is not the Christina who has called the show in the past, by the way.
Dr. Nina, this is Christina on the phone. Can you hear me?
Change is always involves some sort of repetition, first of all. It takes a long time to change. We don't have that Oprah aha moment, and then everything changes. I mean, I love Oprah, but this idea of, aha, oh my God, I see the light, and now everything is going to change, that is a fallacy. The reality is, we go, oh my gosh, aha. Oh, now I see what I need to work on. Now I see what I need to work through. So I just want to normalize that change takes time. And I kind of think about it as like a template, a metal template with raised bumps and things. If you just take a piece of sandpaper over it once, nothing is going to change. But if you constantly take that same sandpaper and back and forth and back and forth over and over and over again, pretty soon you're going to, that template is going to be flat. It's not going to be, you know, it's going to change. Or, I'm dating myself, but The Shawshank Redemption, fantastic movie, and I don't want to give anything away, but basically it is an entire movie about how a little bit of a change at once can lead to huge changes later. Not that this is going to take 20 years like it does in the movie, but just repetition is part of change. So be kind to yourself. Every time that you are catching a thought, every time that you are doing something different, you're creating change. It's not flipping a switch. It's a process. I wish we could just flip a switch. I wish we could. Warren is saying, Ronan, I'm getting a message that people are just tried to call and couldn't, and Warren says, I tried to call and got through, but you could not hear me. So I don't know what's going on there. Let me just make sure that is someone there? Josh is here. Okay. Josh? Hello?
Actually, this is Sharon.
Oh, this is Sharon. Hi, Sharon. Welcome back to the show. And Warren, please try later. Sharon, you got through. I'm so happy. How are you doing?
I'm good. I have something I'd like some help with, and that's this long-standing insomnia. And just for the guests listening, I've had it for about 41 years, gone to sleep clinics, and nothing works. But I'm wondering if you could help me kind of be a detective and figure out what might be going on in the psychological realm. They said that the insomnia is related to the PTSD from living with abuse so long.
I definitely have some thoughts about this, Sharon. When we are sleeping, we are at our most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And you lived with an abuser for some decades. And when we sleep, that is a time when we are vulnerable. And so your body, even though your mind knows you are no longer living with this abuser, your body is saying, we're not going to be vulnerable. Or you, Sharon, you're not going to be vulnerable. I'm protecting you. And so I would start there, this idea that of safety. Intellectually, I'm sure you know you're safe. But some mm-hmm. other part of you, it sounds like some other part of you still feels like you need to protect yourself or be vigilant. Does that mm-hmm. resonate?
Yeah, you know, I think you're probably right there about still, my body is still on that alert. Even though my doors are locked, I know no one can physically bother me. I think there's still the dread of emotional abuse.
Sharon?
Yes.
Okay.
You're right. I do think that, you know, I am physically safe. Sometimes I still worry about some emotional abuse, though.
Well, so your mind does not, your unconscious does not differentiate between emotional abuse or physical abuse. It's just abuse and protection. And so one way of being protective is to be alert and vigilant. And what you're describing with this insomnia is some kind of hypervigilance. It's no matter what your mind knows what it knows, right? Logical versus psychological. So logically, you know, you're safe. No one's going to get you. You're fine. You're good. Nothing is going to happen to you in your sleep. That's what you know logically. Psychologically, you've got armies at the door going, oh no, we're staying up all night and we're waiting for whatever might happen. We're ready. We're ready for trouble. And that is the work, is to be able to deal with the part of you that feels like you still have to, and you mentioned PTSD, that you still have to be vigilant and alert, even though there is no enemy in the house.
A lot of times I get up to eat to help me get to sleep. What should I say to myself when I do that? I mean, I'm not really hungry. It's just gotten to be a habit. Like, maybe this will help.
And I would say that you are probably trying to sedate yourself with food, because it does work. We eat certain things, it just has that calming effect. Mm-hmm. So rather than do that, you need to trick your body into relaxing in other ways. And that's where the progressive muscle relaxation can come in handy really well. Like even if you're right now on the call with me, and I'll do it with you, so you're not alone. So here, I'm going to like tighten up all your muscles, and we're going to just tight. So like abs, arms, whatever muscle you can tight, let's just hold it for another 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now totally release.
That feels good.
Do you feel that? Yeah. Now that is something that you can do to relax your body. And then sometimes when you relax your body, your mind follows, which is probably why eating at night has helped you go to sleep.
Okay. Well, I will try those things. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Thank you for calling. And good luck, and let me know how it goes.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, it's you know, one of the reasons I say, hey, I'm a detective of the mind, is because I'm a detective of the mind. And it's so cool when you really look at, well, why is this person suffering in this way? What, and intellectually and rationally, you know what you know, but things don't change. What's really going on? And when you get to that root issue,
hello,
everything changes.
Hello,
that's
can
why
you hear me?
I like to talk about transformation and not
hello, Dr. Nina.
Change.
Hello. Dr. Nina.
Hello. Yes. Hi. Hi.
Hi.
Who's this?
Dr. Nina. This is Christina calling. I've called before.
Oh, Christina. Of course. You're the Christina that I just talked about when I said the person who asked the question was not the Christina who calls the show.
I know. I'm confusing things totally. I'm like, that's ironic, because I'm actually calling in. And just to let you know, I'm actually not on Instagram. I'm using my husband's account right now. So he's Warren Grubb. That's me. So I don't like being on social media too much, but I'll get my own account so that it doesn't confuse everybody, but I just wanted to, let you know that's actually me. So,
okay.
And I just had a few questions for you. Lots going on, and I just wanted to get your thoughts, you were talking about, like, I listened to Carly Gash's story quite a bit because I have some similar difficulties with my mother. I've gone the opposite that she has. She's taking care of her mother. I cut my relationship with her. I'm trying to do self-care, and it's a process. But what's going on is, you know, my husband's cancer, and so it was a good trip. And successful, and his dad had surgery number one, and he came back, and he's actually leaving again for the second liver surgery on Friday. So it's, you know, very stressful with the global pandemic. Neither of us are vaccinated. His whole family's not vaccinated, including his elderly parents. It's really sort of crazy. Every precaution was taken, but I will tell you, it is disappointing with me on the self-care. He came back and I didn't have him quarantined. He quarantined with me, and it's going to probably happen again this time. And it's just interesting how, you know, and we do, he works from home, and we do quarantine to not put anyone else at risk, but it is disappointing how, like, I will totally put myself at risk. And it's just an interesting ingrained, like, I mean, I'm disappointed in myself, but it's like, I don't, you know, I'll miss him if he's going to be gone on top of that. And so I just wanted to, that's going on. And then the second thing that's going on too is I have been seeing a physical therapist for 2 years and I have my last session and it's just weighing on me. And he told me his son, one of his sons, said he wants to kill himself and that he's cutting himself. And the physical therapist told me what happened, and he said he laughed about it and told his son three ways on how to kill himself. And, you know, the best I could come up with was, no, you did not do that. You need to really rethink that. And I'm just so upset over it, and I've got this last session, and I'm like, do I cancel this last session, or do I give him a piece of my mind? I mean, mental health and illness is, like, serious stuff. So these are the couple of things I'm just observing with myself, and it's hard. Self-care is hard. It's hard to stand up to, you know, hetero cis white men. Sorry, but that's what I'm going to put it. That's how I'm going to put it. So that's what's weighing on me. Any advice?
Well, that is a lot, Christina, and that is truly horrifying, the part about your physical therapist. I mean, how old is this son who's cutting himself?
College. And it's like online at home college.
Yeah. If he was younger, it would almost be a something where you could report him to the, but I would have
over 18. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but this is, I wonder if what's happening in by hearing from this physical therapist, how he is dismissing and denying his son's literal and emotional pain, if that also brings up your being dismissed and your not being taken seriously.
Exactly. It's like I'm re-traumatized. I mean, it's so upsetting. I'm just like, and I'm also disappointed in myself. Like, I'm happy that I said something like, you really need to rethink it, but I'm just like upset because I don't know. Do I go back and give him a piece of my mom? I mean, that's not going to help anything, but, you know, he comes from a different generation. He's older than me where it's, you know, rub dirt on it and psychology is silly. And you know what I'm talking about? There's some people out there like that. So what do you think I should do?
One thing to think about is you couldn't say anything to your parents. You couldn't say anything, right? And saying something to this physical therapist is not going to change him, most likely. I mean, probably not. But if you do it, you're going to do it for you. If you go in and have a session with him, he's got to stay. He's your captive audience. He's working for you. And it is an opportunity for you to say, look, and lay it out, and not just to alert him to what a dangerous stance he's taking, and a horrible, unparental painful, awful dismissal of his son's pain, and the son could, you know, very well hurt himself. And it's, you know, if he does, you will have wanted to know that you did everything right. You would want to know that you said everything that you could say. So there's that part of it, but there's also the part of it that says, this is your opportunity to say to someone else who is very similar to your parents, your truth, mm-hmm. and have to be heard.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And, you know, it still was a big step for me to talk to him to even say I didn't agree with that. And well, I guess I said, and I remember exactly, which was, you need to rethink it. And I told him, so over these 2 years, we have developed a relationship, you know, and I'm so grateful that I'm healing now and like I'm done with physical. This is a miracle. So I think he would actually listen to me. And I let him know about, you know, about my past bulimia. And so we've gotten close in terms of that. And I do think he would pause. I got you. I mean, it's going to happen. I'm going to go. I'm absolutely going to be very upfront with him, and I have no problem doing it. And I'm so happy I called and I agreed with you. It's for me, but I also would feel horrible if anything were to happen and I didn't say more than that specifically. And, you know, in retrospect, he needs to go to therapy. His family should probably go, well, at least his son. And I can delve in a little bit more about my own situation, which I have a little with him already. So I do appreciate that. And I feel much better just mentioning that to you. So yeah, it was shocking. It was shocking, really.
And sometimes parents react that way because the reality is too painful, or not just parents, people. Sometimes people react this way to other people's pain, people they love, because it's too awful to think that this is the enormity, that this is what someone they love is going through, and they feel helpless and they feel whatever. And so their response is to minimize it.
Right.
And this is a defense mechanism.
Well, he minimized it, but then he mocked it as well in front of the family, the other two boys. And that's what was additionally shocking. And then he laughed, which it caught me, because I know when I speak with you, I would sometimes be saying painful things and then I'd laugh and you would mention that to me. And it's a very common thing. I actually watch a lot of people do that when we're laughing, when it's not funny whatsoever. So I'm glad to have this final opportunity coming up next week so that I can be very direct with him. And again, I try not to go into a lecture mode, but I will just pitch it from, you know, this is what happened in my situation. And I didn't cut myself or anything, but, you know, I certainly had my moments of other things. So, I've got a plan now. So I appreciate that.
You didn't cut yourself, but you
bulimic.
Hurt yourself with bulimia, and you cut yourself with words. You know, it's just a different weed, same root.
Yeah. Yes. And so I can sort of say similarly, right, I was trying to self-soothe, and that's what, you know, cutting supposedly is a self-soothing method as well. And then clearly he's depressed enough, and and he had told me his son, you know, had gotten Adderall illegally, and now he got him a prescription. So I can definitely see it's just a tsunami of issues, which I know I cannot solve, but I just want to make sure that I'm heard. And this has been a great talk, because I started here and I can finish it next week. So thanks for giving me the courage to do the right thing.
You are welcome. You have the courage. You have the courage within you. You just needed a little bit of permission, I think.
Yes. 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 Thank you very much. And you gave me some good phrases too as well. And to do it from a comparison, hey, I've had some issues in the past, and my being upfront with other people has been helpful, and I've been doing that for a while now. And I don't mince words, and I will talk more about painful things and not laugh about it afterwards, which is sort of actually empowering. So thank you very much for that.
You are very welcome. And just one thing about your husband and his quarantine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what you're saying is that you are choosing not to protect yourself and have him quarantine, even in another room. I mean, can you make it work for you so that you know, he's there, but you don't put yourself in any potential.
That's a good point. I don't think I even, you know, I'm such a whole hog one way or the other person. Like, that didn't even cross my mind. Now, the last time, I will say, he took red eyes. It was very, he actually took photos at the airport. You know, it was very empty. It was, he had first class seats. It was, but, you know, so we actually maybe falsely felt, you know, that he was protected. And he does wear the full mask, facial shield, all that kind of rigmarole. But you're right. That's a great solution. We absolutely can do that. And I think he'll still be continuing to be cautious. But, you know, like I said, we don't have the vaccine. And it's something for me to think about as to, you know, boy, I sort of put myself last at times. So I still, well, even though I try to take, you know, to do the right thing, it's self-care is hard, especially, you know, coming from my background kind of thing. You're right. And I'm learning a lot from Carly Gash and you. So thank you. So
self-care is hard because we treat ourselves the way we are treated. And if you're not treated as if, you know, you matter, if you're not treated as if you need to take care, the best care possible of yourself, mind, body, and soul, then how do you learn to take care of yourself? So this kind of abdication of a responsible stance towards yourself is similar perhaps to the abdication of responsible parenting. I think about what you've shared in the past, the mom you no longer speak to, and how she kind of let you get abused. And so this indifference, again, similar to Carly Gash, yes, this but different, but similar. This kind of indifference to your well-being may mirror her indifference to your well-being earlier in your life, and that's what you learn, and that's what you're doing. But once you can realize it and find a different way, you don't have to have them stay in a hotel for 10 days. Have them just be in a different room.
Thank you. It sounds so obvious now. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? But yes, that's a fantastic solution, and we can absolutely do that. And I am really thinking hard about, you're right, there's always been an indifference, like, Christina's going to be fine, you know, no matter what kind of thing. And, you know, I wasn't. So it's great. I just feel like I'm trying to pull that unconscious, you know, into the consciousness, into the light. So thank you. I love listening to your show, and I just learn a ridiculous amount all the time. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Christina, and I am so glad that you called, and please feel free to call, whether it's you or your alter ego, Warren, please feel free to call anytime.
I will. Thank you.
Okay, take
Thanks,
good
Dr.
care.
Nina.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Christina. Bye. Aw. Yeah, it's so funny. I just talked about her, and here she is. So. We learn how to treat ourselves by how we're treated. And therefore, it is a process of learning a new way of treating ourselves. It's not like flipping a switch. And what we know has very little to do with what we feel and what we do. You can know that you're worthy of self-care, but you can feel like you're not, and then not take care of yourself. And so it is a process of over and over and over and over to be able to challenge that. That's how you create change. And the other, Christina said she also wants some tips on how to deal with loneliness and not feeling important. So again, not feeling important, kind of similar to Carly Gash's question about worthiness. What has to change for you to feel important? What does important mean? What is it that makes you feel like you're not important? A lot of questions. So a lot of food for thought, but these questions will help you figure out why you have this sense of not feeling worthy, not feeling important, not mattering, I guess is kind of what I'm hearing. Where did this come from? Figure that out first so you can challenge it and then find a way to feel differently about yourself. Regarding loneliness, the key to resolving loneliness is about wanting to be with another person. which is, as this year has taught us, we really need people. We just can't be by ourselves. We need to be with other people to some extent or another. So if you are truly lonely and the answer is to be with someone else, but it is pandemic time and that's not so easy, then the key is to turn that loneliness into solitude. So loneliness is the empty ache of needing to be alone, and it's with people that you don't really vibe with. There's nothing so horrible as feeling lonely in a room full of people. Either way, the answer is solitude. And solitude is when you are able to be with yourself from a place of kindness, support, generosity. When you are there with a kind, loving part of you, you feel solitude, which is you're alone, but it's okay. You can be with yourself. When you are lonely and with a mean part of you, it's unbearable. The other thing is that sometimes people think they are lonely when actually they are bored or they are empty. So boredom is about wanting to do something. So if you feel that, oh, I'm lonely and I'm going to eat something, well, maybe you're lonely and you're symbolically filling that empty place within you with food so you don't feel the emptiness of loneliness. Maybe you're bored and you really just need something to do that feels meaningful and productive. Or maybe, oh, do I have another caller? Oh, I have another caller.
Hello?
Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you?
Hi, Jenny.
Hello.
Good to have you.
Can you hear me? I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Welcome back. It's been a while. How are you doing?
I know. I'm doing okay. Work has been, you know, back. Things are going back to a little bit of craziness here in LA. So it's been back to work, back to sort of life, and I haven't had a Wednesday off to call you, but I have off today, so I thought I would give you a buzz and say hello.
Hello. Well, what are you noticing now that you're back to work, and now that you know things are changing a little bit on your end? What are you noticing about your relationship with yourself? Or others, or whatever you called for.
Yeah, and that's what I was wanting to talk to you about. Actually, it's really interesting through this past year how some people have just changed so dramatically, and other people have now just like gone right back to the norm. You know, it's like that last year never happened for some people, and it's just back to the complaining and the all the shit, you know. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like a new lease on life for some reason. I feel like that break during the pandemic made me really like think about life and you know, and relationships and career and just myself in general, you know, that like you were saying, the solitude. I learned like that when I'm alone, I don't have to be lonely. Like, and other people, I feel like my mother, who's, you know, been, she just hasn't, this has not affected her at all. She's just gone right back to, her old ways. Like, you know, it seems like she enjoys suffering or something. I can't pinpoint why she feels the need to constantly put herself in that, you know, place of suffering instead of helping herself, which she could easily do as far as I'm concerned. But she doesn't see that.
Again, it's not logical, it's psychological. So I feel compelled to share the oldest psychoanalytic joke. It's like the only joke I know. It's the only psychoanalytic joke I know. And it's so unfair and so like anti-mother. But if it's not one thing, it's your mother. There we go. Ba-dum, boom. Yes, mother. It's also your father and everyone else who's ever affected you. But there are reasons why people choose to suffer. Sometimes they think it's noble. Sometimes they think they get a lot of attention from it. Sometimes if they're suffering, everyone gathers around, oh, let us help you. And then they just never quite can give up the suffering, because if by giving up the suffering, they give up all this attention and care, and they confuse concern with love. And so therefore they are motivated to stay in a bad place. Some people suffer because they have some kind of guilt, some kind of conscious or unconscious guilt. And guilty people are not supposed to enjoy their lives. Guilty people are supposed to suffer. Mm-hmm. There are many reasons why your mom potentially could be choosing to suffer.
Well, I understand all of what you're saying, and it makes sense, except that she refuses help.
Exactly.
Like, she refuses.
Because if she got help, she wouldn't suffer, right? Right. So as long as you're like,
but then refuses our help. It's just so strange.
Because she doesn't want help. She wants you to go, you could do this or this or this or this. She doesn't actually want to get better.
It seems like so exhausting, not just for us, but for her to do that. I just can't understand it.
Well, if you look at it not from a logical place, you're going through something hard. Here's the solution. Yeah. Boom. But that's kind of like saying, oh, you're binge eating or stress eating. Just don't. Just don't. You're anorexic.
Yeah.
Eat something. Like, it makes sense, but it doesn't, it's not going to work. So you have to understand that for your mom, suffering and struggling, it does something for her. She gets some sort of gain from it. And whatever it is that she is gaining, she's not going to give it up until she no longer gets the gain.
Okay, that's understandable. She's even gone to the point this week where she made my brother drive, like, over the weekend on his, like, only day off, an hour from, you know, where he lives to her, and take her to the hospital during a global pandemic because she was having a panic attack. And now she refuses to take the medication that they gave her. So,
what she's getting from it. And now she won't take the medication. And now everyone's going to go, Mom, take the medication. You need to take the medication. How are you doing? And even if it's urging her to take the medication, that is the attention.
My brother is actually mad at her. Like he's annoyed at her and hasn't called her since. So is that something, like, I would think that, and now she's mad at him for, you know, like, I just don't understand. And I know I'm thinking of it logically. I just, like, what is she getting out of this?
So here's how you handle that situation, because even the mad feeling, it's energy, it's a reaction. And though she's mad at him for being mad, his being mad at her is a reaction, and it's energy her way. And that even feels good to someone who is suffering. So how you handle that is you just go, you know what, Mom? You could take the medicine or not take the medicine. It's your choice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's your life, it's your body, it's your choice. Okay, gotta go. See you later. And you stop gratifying the person's need for that kind of negative attention.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I didn't understand. I was like, she even is okay with negative attention? Like, it just seems so strange. Most people, I would think, prefer positive attention. But my mom.
Logically. But this is not logical. You know, it's, I know, as you know, I treat a lot of people with eating disorders, and a lot of people with eating disorders had family dynamics where what they felt was disregarded. But if they were sick or if something was going on with their bodies, and again, I'm making a gross generalization. This is not everybody, but I've just noticed it a lot. If they were sick or something was going on with their bodies, or they fell or they got in an accident or something was going on with their bodies, they would get all this attention. And later on, learn to use their bodies as a way to kind of make people try to see them or hear them. And of course, it doesn't work because you're with people who can't discern that you are, if you're gaining weight, you're actually miserable, and it's a message to them. Or if you're losing weight, same thing. And they don't even know they're doing it. But it's like, if you learn to use your body as a way of getting interaction and getting relationship and getting something, you're not going to stop doing that even when you become a woman in her whatever 60s, 70s, whatever your mother is. So
yeah,
70s. So
all right. Yeah. And I mean, she does that
comes
too.
From
she somewhere. She is so skinny, and she feels like when she eats, she gets a stomach ache. So she like doesn't eat. And when you look at her, you think she's sick because she looks sick. And then she's in her 70s and she's got other, medical issues. And so it's almost like a manipulation. Like she knows that even if she's having a panic attack, we might think she's having a heart attack or dying or something, and it's like, you take that chance, as me and my brother say, like, is she having a panic attack? Like, it seems like she's having a panic attack, but what if on that off chance she's not having a panic attack? Look at her. Like, she's old, skinny, she's miserable, like she could be having a heart attack. We don't know. It's just frightening. It's frightening. And then
it is frightening.
When you find out after you take her to the hospital, she is having a panic attack, you're like, the anger sets in. It goes from fear then to anger,
So what do you do with your anger towards her for this emotional manipulation?
Because I didn't have to drop everything and take her. I found out after the fact, that when my brother called me and was like, this happened. So, but my brother, he's angry, and he's like, we need to get her, help, and we need this. And she refuses it all. So,
Of course she'll refuse it because she's getting what she wants. The way to deal with her is take her to the hospital and then just say, if you want to take your, if you don't even ask her if she's taking her medicine, she's a woman in her 70s. She is perfectly capable of figuring out that she needs to take it. So you just okay. And if she says, oh, I'm not taking my medicine, you say, oh, well, you are a grown woman. That's your choice. But not to gratify this constant need to, you get it.
I get it. And it's just really hard because I think she knows she's got us between a rock and a hard place.
And so you've got to
deny a 77-year-old, who thinks she's having a heart attack, a hot trip to the hospital,
Well, you take her to the hospital, but then you don't say, oh, mom, are you okay? What's going on? Have you taken your medication? No.
And then when I asked her, why didn't you just call 911 if you thought you were really, something was wrong? And she's like, I'm not going to call 911. It's just going to have to go to an ambulance. And there's COVID. And there's, but Will can come and, take you to the hospital. That's different. It's not different.
I can hear how frustrated you are and upset.
It's exhausting.
And understandable, because I'm sure this is a lifetime, your lifetime of having to take care of your mother. And then if you're taking care of your mother, who's taking care of you?
Well, yeah, that's true as well. And, And like I said, like after this year, I just like, I feel like I can finally breathe again. And I just feel like, I don't know, like there's an like this whole rest of my life ahead of me. And then, you know, I love my mother, but she just brings me to this place of like, oh, I don't know. It really is just emotional exhaustion. She brings me to a place of emotional exhaustion.
And that's why setting limits and with her and not gratifying her and changing the subject if she starts talking about her body and this and that and what's going on and her anxiety, just be very like,
yeah,
yeah, we'll figure it out, and then change the subject, because otherwise
okay.
you are left with all of these feelings. And
yeah.
so that she can get a little few drops of worry from you, and then you're drained, and then it never sticks with her, right? So it's a cycle.
But why, I'm curious, why would a person, like a mother or a parent or whatever, someone who loves someone, want another person to worry about them?
Because
you know what I mean?
Because they confuse worry with love. If your mom, for example, is one of those people who, I don't know what your grandparents were like, but if they didn't pay it, if they paid a lot of attention to her when she fell and scraped her knee, they didn't pay attention in other ways, she learns, oh, if I scrape my knee, my parents are going to really be worried about me and show me a lot of attention and care. So that's love. And then that person learns, hey, if something's wrong with my body, that then I get that attention. And that feels like love.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. As you can see, my mother confuses me deep into my core.
Well, I hope I have cleared up some of the confusion, and then you'll just be left with processing how you feel, not just about what she's mm-hmm. doing, but how it affects you, which does clearly, and be able to be there for yourself, you know, instead of just
I appreciate it. I always get a lot of insight from you.
Well, I am so glad that you called, and today's the day of people who haven't called for a while calling back. So I'm so glad that you did. And you have officially taken us to the end of the show. So,
oh, good.
You get what Lawrence O'Donnell would say is the last word. So thank you for joining me today. Thank you, Jenny and Christina. Everyone, and Sharon, and everyone who's written in again. If you are not a member of my Food for Thought community, a great group of people, head on over to Facebook and do a search on Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. You will love it. Such nice people there. So supportive and amazing. And I will see you there. And I will also see all of you next week. Oh, no, I will not see you next week. I'm not going to be here next week. But I will see you in 2 weeks. So thank you for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I'm here every Wednesday, except next week, March 3rd, at 11 a.m. Pacific. And you can listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. Have a wonderful couple of weeks, everyone. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.